lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, we took a week off to hit a reset button, but we come back a bigger, bolder. You want to tell our listeners what that entails?
Yeah, we're in a very exciting phase. I must admit, we relaunching, I suppose relaunch, a soft relaunch, I suppose is what it is. I'm not always sure of those terms, but yeah, we're back and we're part of a new, bigger, bolder family on the Jackpod on Jacaranda FM. And with us today, also to chat a little bit about that, is a good old friend of ours, somebody who's shared a drink with us in several parts of the world.
I've stopped counting.
Oh, and there's also obviously a very familiar voice for Jacaranda listeners, Kolo Nchinga.
What a pleasure to see you guys, and I'm slightly offended that you call me an old friend. I never used to be, but I understand from whence it comes. Really fantastic to catch up. I've been listening. I'm a fan, and this is the crucial time, right, that really kicks off internationally.
Did he call you a good old friend or an old good friend? Because there is a
difference slightly.
Well, given some of our experiences together, I don't think we can get into those on the pod, but I think we leave it just there. Yeah, it's big. It's international rugby. The Springboks are playing. They're down under. They've got a terrible, woeful record in Australia, even though they've done well and won back-to-back World Cups. And just, I think that's to kick us off. Liam had a bit of a chat with head coach Rossie Erasmus, just before they left for Australia. So have a listen.
After working with him, where do you see Sasha's future? 12, 10 or 15?
Yeah, I have my views on that, but Tony has got some great plans, and I think the way Sasha played, and Lucanio just came back for a long time and he hasn't really played top-class rugby, I think he can slot in 10, 12 and 15. And what we saw with Lucanio, when we were down to 14 men and he had to play 12, Lucanio did really well at 12 as well. So it's interesting that I think we've got quite a lot of covers now at 10, 12 and 15, but I think Sasha's best position is probably 10.
I know, that's a question for me. I know he's asked his franchise that he wants to play 10, but he hasn't made a similar request.
No, I can't really make requests. Yeah, there's so many guys here that goes for those positions. Not that we won't listen if somebody asks that and he says he just wants to play that, then it's just he must just compete with that specific. But he'll play anywhere currently, and we've seen at 15 and at 10, and there were sometimes when we were down to 30 that the backline was so disorganized, but between him and Lucanio they really organized it well.
Okay, if you have to give the box a rating out of 10 in the terms of performances this year, what would it be?
I would say the first 30 minutes versus Ireland in the second test was probably the most disappointing. I think we've played four test matches of 1-3. We would have loved to win everyone. But certainly squad depth and looking a little bit further ahead, but not too far, otherwise you battle in the present. I think we've certainly learn more about a lot of youngsters who we think can do the job for us going forward. And then there's some old guys who said, listen, yeah, we can go another year or two or maybe till the next World Cup. But yeah, we would have loved to win all four matches. But I think out of all, what is that, 80 times 4, the 320 minutes, I would say the first 30 in the Ireland second test match is probably the most disappointing.
I know you've already started on that road, given the selections against Portugal. Now you've got rugby championships where there is you have to win as well. But it also gives you then a proper opportunity to look at maybe some of the youngsters and see how they go against the Wallabies.
I think it's difficult to say it, and then when the pressure is on, our fans expect to win, and that's totally what we want to do. But I think having this sort of mini tours where you play two games in Australia, it's the same opposition, you've got 33 players there. Ideal world is you start the first test match and the next test match you have a little bit of a blend. Mm. But then again, you have to win the test match to keep momentum. So the plan surely is to try and win the rugby championship first of all. Get some youngsters some test match experience at a certain level. Mm. Of course, Portugal is a level, you know, a young Wales team is a level, which we played. Going into Ireland, that's another level. And then, not to say that All Blacks in New Zealand is better than Ireland, but it's almost unfamiliar for us now, New Zealand and Australia, because we're not playing Super Rugby, where the Irish teams and the Welsh teams is probably more familiar, because we play URC and Champions Cup against them. So, Rugby Championship is becoming like a new competition
like
for
the end
us.
Of your tour used
yeah,
to be.
Like the end of your tour used to be. It's almost swapping, yeah. Mm. So, but yes, they're trying to blend some of the youngsters into the team.
How happy are you with the team's evolution in terms of how you want to play? If you look at the four tests, and it's also very different tests, I suppose, to make a proper comparison. But I mean, how happy are you on that front?
I think in certain areas, definitely. There seem small things that we tweak that obviously people won't immediately see that we hope to. Will become more apparent when people see the way we play, you know. But in I would say the Irish second test match, getting Willie concussion in the first, was it 3 minutes?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Inside the first 3 seconds.
Inside the first 3 minutes, and then losing Andre, you know, in the first 3 minutes. It was out of the four test matches, two was very disruptive, early injuries. But yet it gave other players opportunity, and would have loved to win that second Irish test match. But I think we're going in the right direction, and we have to understand that the supporters always have patience, well, because the building work is a sort of a negative thing. Because we are trying to develop our game, because we have another year which we didn't have in the past. Mm.
What have you made of the Wallabies under Joe Smith so far?
I worked with Joe, I worked actually under Joe in Munster, you know, when he was an Irish coach. He's a very, very disciplined, know your roles, particular on detail, a very hard worker, you know. He's got Mike Cronin as his forward scrum coach, you know. He's got some wins now under the belt, and he certainly knows what he wants, and he's plugging some youngsters now at the right time. So yeah, this will be, we've normally struggled with Australia either with the first or the second test match, so we're going with a bit of a different approach, going a little bit earlier, flying tomorrow, and then playing two games there against a team that probably is not as settled as when we played the previous year, so Joe will have them ready.
This is probably the last one. Your persona in South Africa has taken on almost new dimensions. If I can use the word cult hero, there's like almost a Rassie mania. How do you make sense of it all? You can't say that you're not a deeply popular character, because you are.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not. I love the interaction that's happening between me and South African players and people and. Not the attention, the actual interaction that people are talking about Springbok rugby and giving ideas. I can't tell you how many emails and things I get and messages and which is rugby related. It's not why didn't you think of this? Why didn't you try that? And I enjoy it. I'm not talking about being the center of attraction. I'm talking about the love of what people are showing towards the game and what we're trying to do, and that I enjoy.
Okay, well, that's cool. Thank you.
Very interesting stuff, Liam. Very, very insightful stuff on how they're bringing through the youngsters. And we've seen that already with some of the selections of Elric Lowe and Sasha this week. Well, what's your expectations for the game?
I think the fact that he is prepared to make a bold selection, certainly in the case of Sasha, tells you something about the assuredness in that Bok camp. I think they're in a much better space than they were 2 years ago, or even if you take it further back when they played on Australian shores. It's a more settled team. He obviously feels comfortable in the skills that those two players bring to the Springboks. And although Sasha's young, he has also certainly staked a claim for the number 10 jersey. So I've got no issues there. In fact, it's a test match that I'm looking forward to immensely.
Yeah, and Kola, one of the things that has really become apparent, especially for us, we've been covering the game for a long time, is the fact that in the past, when somebody like Evan Rus was left out or sort of got a shoulder injury and had to go for an op, it would be like despair and who's going to play.
Yeah.
But the depth is so great at the moment in the Springbok team that it's not really a talking point even at the moment.
No, I was quite worried about the injuries before the Wales test because I sort of thought, oh goodness, how is this going to impact over the course of the season? And when you looked at the names, and I think of somebody particularly like a Damian Willemse, thought this was his opportunity, right, to either stake a claim for the 15 jersey or whatever else because he has sort of been floating around. But I feel quite heartened because it tells me that there's a master plan to move on without. I do feel for one or two guys like Amani, obviously, but I don't think there's that level of same level of disappointment and oh, he's completely out of the running. We used to have that conversation about the second or the third fly half, whether it's an Elton Yankees or what have you, and I just don't have the same sense.
Yeah, I just think that once you've won back-to-back World Cups, as Rassie has now done with his team, and he tells people that we're working with a group of 43 players, that it kind of pacifies a lot of minds and that people are more at ease that, you know, they're going to make selections. Yeah, and there you will get it wrong because I think it's if you tinker too much with a particular lineup and you cop a defeat, that's just, you know, high end sport reminding you if you stray off the straight and narrow, you know, sometimes you're going to get bitten. But there's an overall picture, and I think people are comfortable with that. So if he goes, he always talks about it's not just about the 15 or the 23, it's the bigger group.
Well, talking about tinkering, I mean, the change is quite big when you look at 9-10 this weekend, right? So
although not again, surprising,
it comes back to the assuredness that they have in the capabilities of the squad.
Yeah. I was going to make the point that the one thing Rossi has been consistent on over the last 6 years, and Jacques was the same when he was doing the press conferences, is that the message is clear: we've got a plan. If the plan works, we go to the next phase of the plan. If the plan doesn't work, we have to reassess. And the same, this weekend we're seeing a bunch of youngsters, a couple of youngsters get their nod, Elric, Sasha, those type of guys. Yeah. If that works, next week it gives them more leeway to blood a few more guys and maybe be a bit more radical in your selection policy. And you see that coming through. You talk about the nines, though. The one thing is definitely coming through is the way Tony Brown wants this attack to go. And I think that's what's really formed Kobus Reinach's selection.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely the type of player that, he's never played a bad game for the Springboks anyway, but he's the type of player that fits very well into that quick ball that Tony Brown, that quick recycling. And Grant Williams is probably the next guy in line. So some people ask, is Kobus Reinach too old? I think at the moment, when you've got these youngsters coming through, playing with them, with guys with experience, that obviously, one, it prolongs the older guy's career a bit, and two, it brings that experience to the youngster. So I can see that. I can see the other scrum halves like Jaden Hendricks, even Faf de Klerk, having to up their game if this is the way the Boks want to play.
Yeah, I mean, Kobus still brings speed. I mean, he brings that in by bucket loads. Him partnering with Sasha is the exciting bit. And although we've now spoken about the youth and, how they are sort of promoting that element, I then also think of Vary Leroux, a man who returns to the venue where the Springboks, the last time they won 2013 at Suncorp, he was untouchable. I mean, that was a virtuoso performance where everything he touched turned to gold.
Yeah.
And given the way the Boks have sort of set up their stall for this game, I think, Vary could very much be one of those, could be one of those performances again that reminds you of his true value to the side. In an attacking sense, that is.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think if you look around Sasha as well, you play a youngster and you want experience around him. Well, you don't get more experience than having five double World Cup winners and one. The only guy who's got a single World Cup medal is Kurti Arendse. But everybody else there has won double World Cups in the back line. And I mean, I think most teams would kill for that sort of experience. I don't know. Quick prediction, guys. I think the Boks are going to break their duck there. I think Australia aren't that good. They're going to come with some tricks, but I think the Boks are just more streetwise.
Yeah, the Boks have found ways of tripping up against, and we haven't seen Joe Schmidt's team for this weekend, but they've tripped up against lesser Wallaby teams. But I think there's enough in this squad, certainly experience-wise, and then just raw talent as well. So I'm seeing a 25-16.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen quite a few quotes from Joe Schmidt leading up to the weekend, and I'm always wary of, you know, headlines sometimes are taken a little bit out of context, because that's, you know, the exciting thing that he said about really knowing the Springboks all that well and what have you.
And, the referee and
know what they're going to do. And I don't think there's too much to read into that. I think that it's reset button. They have struggled, but they have done a lot better, I think, in the last few weeks, the Aussies. I still give it to the Springboks. I think this is their chance to claim that second elusive win, especially in Brisbane. I'm going to call it by 5 points.
What is it so that makes Brisbane so difficult?
That's a good question.
Is it not the weather?
Brisvegas, well, as they call it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that. But yeah, there is certainly something in the air there, isn't there?
Pretty,
yeah, I mean, if you look at the last, well, it wasn't in Brisbane, but the first game in Adelaide 2 years ago, I mean, we had that terrible tackle by Marika Koribete on Makazole Mpimpi, right, which should have been a red card and a penalty try. Then we had the Oscar-winning performance by Nick White when Faf touched his moustache, and Faf got a yellow card.
Very
for that.
Hard he touched it.
Brushed it, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, those are the things I'm saying. I mean, they're bizarre moments, but they tend to always happen in Aussie games.
Well, I think the Wallabies, to be fair to them, they draw the opposition into those situations. Yes. I think their level of gamesmanship. I'm not having a go at them. I'm just pointing out the obvious here. Because that also is a skill. I don't necessarily like seeing it, but it is a skill.
Yeah. So I do feel like last year we played their game.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that I should guard against, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, that wasn't the only thing that's happened this week. Of course, everybody's talking Olympics, and while everyone's concentrating on the athletic track at the moment, just the Blitzbox were the first ones there, and Blood and Guts literally came into the tournament, qualified last, didn't really have anything going for them, and came through and with just pure guts won a bronze medal. We've chatted to Philip Snyman, but before we get to him, Liam, I mean, how good in context of sevens rugby was that bronze medal?
They had to dig deep. I mean, they had to find ways of getting the job done. And in this case, in a very roundabout way, they in the end played six games. They won three, but they won two really important ones to get them within medal contention, and then of course win that game to, you know, secure the medal. So absolute kudos to Philip. If you asked me before the Olympics how they would get to the medal, I wouldn't entirely have predicted that path. But you have to say, you have to take your hat off to them. I mean, that was just as you said earlier, blood and guts.
Yeah. I think the other thing, and although just knowing how we've watched them across the world and in Hong Kong in particular, we've got so used to a standard set by the Blitzbox that they're obviously going through a bit of a dip. And if you look at their season results, the fact that they had to qualify for the Olympics through the back door. And I suppose what comes next is the important thing. How do they build on this bronze medal and make sure that they rise to be at the top again? Philip Snyman, who we've chatted to, is still interim coach.
Yeah.
Do you think he's done enough to claim that title as a full-time job?
Well, I think he's got the experience too, and he's seen them in the good times and now through bad as well, because it really was a terrible season for them. I didn't expect them at all to get into the middle contention after the first two games. To lose your first two in the manner that they did, and then to beat Japan and the turnaround, and then to sustain it on day two, something must have happened in the Olympic athletes' village that night. I don't know what it is, but whatever that is, bottle it, and there'll be opportunity. I do like his experience there. I don't want to see too much fruitling around when it comes to the coaching stuff.
I think some of that will reveal itself in the interview.
Yeah, and there's also, you look out for a nice tidbit of what the Australian coach said to him about how you get yourself up to play a bronze medal match.
Up being the operative.
So with no further ado, let's go straight into that interview. Yes, Philip Snyman.
It's obviously a huge weekend. There's been so much talk about the Olympics and everything that happened. But, of course, the first team to kick off before the Olympics even had that much-discussed opening ceremony was the Rugby Sevens and the Blitzbox. And as we said before, last time we spoke to him, we said to Philip, we're going to bring him back when they win a medal. And we still laughed about it. But yeah, he's back with a bronze medal in hand, built on guts and determination. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Lemia. And I must say, you guys are a man of your words because you did get me back. So no, it's good to be back. And I think a lot easier talking to you guys now than before the Olympic Games.
No, all
Yeah.
thanks to you. I mean, geez, when we said at the time, we'd love to have you back, we were actually serious. But of course, if we, once you put that out into the big wide world, people think that we're a bunch of jokers, which we obviously are as well. But I mean, we won't go into that.
Hi, Liam.
No, Philip, I was going to say, I mean, you now have got a quite an interesting record. You've won an Olympic medal as a player and as a coach. Which one's better?
Yeah, Brendan, to be honest, I think it's actually an easy answer. In 2016, we went to the Olympic Games as favorites, and then we fell short against Great Britain and then beat Japan with 50 points in the third, fourth playoff. So not really too much of competition in that third, fourth, or that bronze medal match. This one completely different, going in as underdogs, last to qualify, no hopes of even reaching the quarterfinals, and then coming back with a bronze medal. So I think even though I didn't get the medal, all the players received medals, but I think this bronze is really special, especially from where we came from and what it means for the team at the moment.
What was your overriding emotion at final whistle? Obviously, you've had the experience as a player, and this was a little bit different. But what, given what you have and the team has gone through the last year and a half or so, what was your overriding emotion?
Yeah, I don't think I can put that in words. It's almost impossible. Tears of joy, like respect for the players, filling up that jersey, their determination, the character, the guts that they've showed, and overall just really grateful. And then also really humbled because the guys showed a lot of character. And to be honest, if 3 weeks or 3 months ago, one would never thought to for the place to stand on the podium. But yeah, it's a feeling that you can't really describe, and I'm really happy for the players.
I want to take you back to day one. I mean, you guys put in all the hard work, everything, and you get to that first game and you lose it. You basically had no ball in that game against Ireland, literally. That first off, I think you guys touched the ball once. And so you lose that game, and then you lose against New Zealand. I mean, I think the rest of us probably thought, geez, you guys are going to almost be on your way home before the opening ceremony. Just go through those emotions after all that work and getting there, and how did you pick those guys, the guys up for day two?
Yeah, I think we went into the tournament working really hard on our defense. And to be honest, not all bad on day one. If you think about it, Ireland had 85% ball possession. We had 15%. And then they only scored two tries. And with the 15%, we scored eight tries. So actually, I mean, our defense was working, but we didn't have any ball in hand. And then the next game against New Zealand, the whole thing is let them get more ball in hand with the defense. And then the moment we got ball after two phases, we gave ball position away. Silly errors. I think there was four knock-ons in that game. So obviously day one didn't go according to plan. And of the first game, it was almost like, gents, we just need to get more ball in hand. Then everything will start working. Off the second one, I don't think I'm allowed to mention the words that I used in the circle or in that team huddle, but there were some strong words and some honest talks in the team. And then after that, the guys really came up all guns blazing, firing up for the game against Japan. And I think everybody expected us to win or to beat Japan, but not with that margin. And we had to beat them quite a big margin to go through to the quarterfinals. So yeah, I think it was a hard chat, but definitely necessary. And I think the guys were honest with each other.
If I may, I want to fast forward a little bit. So you lose a semi-final, but then you have to pick the guys up in every sense, emotionally especially for the bronze medal place. How do you do that? I mean, does it involve a lot of talking, or do you think players process that mostly by themselves and they figure it out for themselves?
No, we had a talk just before we went out to the warm up, and I think before the Australian game, The team talk or the talk that I gave the guys was probably longer than our actual game plan, because I knew the guys can get themselves mentally up for that game. The result will look after itself, and it's difficult. And one of the Aussie guys actually mentioned something to me, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. I said it to the guys afterwards. It's almost like in cricket, or you get like a really hard shot down under, and then your wife calls you a couple of minutes later and tell you she's up for it. So you can't say no to that. And I think that summed it up perfectly. But the guys really showed that they want to be there, and they want to make the most, and they want to make the nation proud.
Good heavens, you rose to the occasion.
Definitely. And that's afterwards I told them, they just showed they're never going to say no to it. So I'm very happy for them. Their minds are in the right space.
Philip, just on that semi-final against France, I mean, I think we all went through, you probably were with us in the World Cup last year, and as half of South Africa went through many heart attacks as the Springboks went on their way to the World Cup with those one-point victories. We've been in Stade de France before. I was there for the Ireland game last year as well. Liam was there for the World Cup. Yeah, we know exactly how raucous that crowd can be. I mean, have you experienced a crowd like that ever in Sevens before? Or was it probably the most hostile crowd that you've ever seen in a Sevens game?
That's probably some of the best atmospheres that I've seen, and especially that game against France. And I think that the final was the same. I think the closest it got is a sour crowd at Cape Town Stadium when the Springbok Sevens are playing. But that was, yeah, it was something really special. Obviously not in our favour, but the atmosphere were electric.
Was that as intimidating as it gets on the Sevens circuit? I mean, not officially on the Sevens circuit, but you know what I mean.
Yes, definitely. I don't think it is getting better than that. The Frenchies, and we know they're a very passionate nation. And I think in that game, that semi-finals, and one could argue we had them against the ropes. We scored the first try, but at the end, they got three opportunities in that game. They used all three opportunities. We probably got four opportunities and only used one. And I think the crowd got in behind them, and the crowd got the best out of the home team. So I think they deserve to be the champions, especially in front of a crowd like that. Yeah, no, it was just an amazing experience.
Just one thing about the French team, I don't want to dwell on them at all, but the Antoine Dupont factor, how big is it, or how big has it been for them the last while since he started playing Sevens?
I think they used him very well. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the world, if not, yeah, he's right up there. And on day one, they started him, and then after that, they basically played him for the knockout stage. They played him off the bench to bring some impact and calmness off the bench. And I think their playmaker, Steven Perez, they got something in him. His kickoffs are brilliant. And so they stuck with that, start the game off, keep it close. And then when Dupont comes on, the crowd really gets in behind the team. He have a lot of maturity. He can control the game, and a lot of X factors. So I think they used him really well. And to be honest, yeah, and to be fair, I actually think it's good for the game of Sevens to have a guy like that playing in the Olympic Games, playing on the circuit, and the same with one or two of the Aussie players, same with Ireland, getting the big names from 15s in, I think can only grow the game and make it even better.
Yeah, but just on that, I mean, this is a never-ending debate. So ever since I've watched Sevens, and I'm sure Liam as well, there's always been this debate about 15s players in Sevens. And maybe just for those people watching and listening, how difficult is it for a 15s player to transition to Sevens, first of all? And what sort of things do you look for? And do you see 15s players coming back into your system at all? Or is it one of those things where you think it's, because it was the Olympic Games, it's just one of those things, and you're going to get specialist Sevens players just going through? You're not going to get more 15s players coming through to Sevens, if I can put it that way.
No, there's definitely a lot of similarities, and like I said, the game is I won't say completely different, but has evolved a lot over the last couple of years. But I think a quality player like a Dupont, he can go back and forth because he's a quality player. He can pick up things really quickly, and it is different, especially the movement in defense lines. the way to get to cleans, the space on the field, the connection between defenders. But if you're a quality player and if you're a smart player, you can pick it up a little bit quicker. So I do believe in future also, if you can have guys coming in for a couple of tournaments, if they come in for a couple of tournaments, then they can go and play.
Philip, yeah. What do you think this Olympic Games, I suppose especially since the host nation won it and there was a lot of vibe around it, what do you think it would do for Sevens rugby?
I think it's going to be interesting, especially the next season, how teams go about it. Will they invest as much as an Olympic year? Will they maybe pull back a little bit before a Commonwealth Games or a Sevens World Cup again? So it's going to be interesting. And I even think there's one or two coaches moving on or that will leave teams, one or two players that will finishing up. So I think the next year or two in Sevens, it's going to be interesting to see the ideas and the thought processes behind unions, behind teams, and also behind Olympic committees supporting the Sevens. And I think there might even be one or two changes on the Sevens circuit, as I understand. So I think it's going to be an interesting year or two ahead of us.
And in terms of the popularity of the game, do you think that will that's on the up?
Yes, definitely. I think that obviously there has been one or two issues that they need to resolve, and Sevens has grown tremendously over the last couple of years, and then they combine the men and the women's now, and which make it difficult at one venue. So I think if they can get that right to go back to the 2-day tournament, the 3-day tournament might get long, but there's not a lot of venues that can host a 2-day tournament with 24 teams competing. So I know they've been working really hard behind the scenes, see how they can change the format to get it back to a 2-day tournament, because especially like if you take Cape Town, for instance, South Africa don't want to come out and watch the Springbok Sevens team play at 11 o'clock and then only again 10 o'clock at night. They want to watch three matches at 11, 3 and 7, and then it's a full day of rugby for them. So I know they're working hard behind the scenes to get the perfect model and to get the right recipe. We'll have to wait and see what they come up with.
Just on a bit of a left field one, how bad were those cardboard beds? Tell me in the village. I don't know if our listeners maybe don't know, but they all were recyclable beds made out of hard cardboard. And I've seen a couple of TikTok videos from a bunch of players, notably some of the Springboks women's players like Libby and them, trying to jump on those beds, and they looked hard as a rock.
Put it through its paces, as it were, Brendan.
Listen, the first time, like, I was actually nervous to get onto that bed the first time, but up until the last day, my bed was in fine condition, left it as I found it there. So actually a very interesting experience. But like I said, it was unique to the Olympics, but actually a cool experience. And maybe that's something you'll remember for quite some time, and maybe a story here and there from some of the other athletes or some of the other coaches. But yeah, it was interesting, and but the guys really enjoyed the Olympic Games. It's special, and you can only imagine with all the athletes and different teams, Team USA, which have a very rich Olympic culture, Canada, Australia, Great Britain. So yeah, awesome experience and a really good Olympic Games in Paris.
We're glad to hear that none of the screws on your bed needed tightening afterwards, Philip. It's pretty hard, mate.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know how. Like maybe I grew up differently, but how do you put screws in cardboards? But yeah, I've never heard of it. But they maybe I need to spend more time with you so you can learn me one or two things.
Philip, we won't ask you if any of the players had to replace their beds, because I think that's one of those things that goes on tours and stays on tour.
You don't need to ask the question. I can tell you. We were in first in the village. We arrived the first day. We were also one of the first teams to leave. And I actually think some teams actually stayed in our rooms afterwards, and there were no complaints. So I'm a proud coach off field or on field first, but definitely off field also.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, I think we've chatted, we could probably go on for hours on that, but you probably want to have some rest and time with your family. You guys have just got back. So, yeah, I hope you're going to take some rest and take some time off before the hard work begins again and enjoy it. And I'm sure we'll chat to you again soon.
No, Brendan, thank you very much, Liam. Thank you, Rachel. And you guys are always there supporting us, even in the bad times. You get a message in the good times. You guys are always there. So thank you very much to all the listeners also. And yeah, the team will take some time off. But yeah, I think we'll come together back on the 2nd of September. But before then, there's obviously a lot of things that still need to happen and need to be sorted out. So, but we'll definitely chat closer to the time. But thank you very much for all the support from your side.
Philip, many congratulations. You made a lot of people very proud. Well done.
Thank you, Liam. Thank you,
Bye.
Bren.
You've got to love his honesty because I suppose he absolutely has license just to say it as it is now, because I mean he came from just about nowhere to grab a bronze. Well, not him personally, but certainly the team.
Yeah, I know. Look, Philip's always been one of those guys, straight down the line. I know the players appreciate that. Some of them don't, because at times you have to obviously walk that hard line and say as it is to the players. But certainly going forward, I can see him making a success of it if he gets the backing, if they get the funding, and if he finds the right players. I think there has to be a bit of a retweak of the system as well.
Yeah. You've got what he said about turning things around from where they came to the Olympics, but then also sevens is just lends itself to your ability to make quick changes, to think on your feet, to bounce back immediately, because you may be down in one moment, a few hours later you have to engage yourself in a fresh battle, and you know some people get their heads around it,
yeah.
That others don't.
And it's a very young team. One thing I remember Sandile Ngcobo once mentioning to me is the battle that these guys have to retain. First, identify the talent. Because they're almost the players that are not seen by the big unions at age 17, 16, 18. And then to try and retain them once they break through is a massive, massive challenge for the seven side. So I don't know how to rectify that, because once somebody does develop, because you're talking about a 19, 20-year-old, 21-year-old, you can't bemoan them the opportunity that they'll take to move on to the 15-man game.
Well, yeah, and every time a Quagga Smith, Kurt De Aarons, Cheslin Kolbe, yeah, does something magical at 15's level, that makes it even harder for them, because then those recruiting coaches look for those sort of things, and it's understandable. But yeah, we got to give Philip kudos. We did say to him before the Olympics we'd get him back, and he honoured that coming back. Of course, I think it'd be much easier with a medal, coming back with a medal, but he did honour that, and we'll definitely be back with him when they make those decisions and those changes, and hopefully he is there, and we can go forward with him and hear what changes he's planning. But that's it. That's our first pod with the jackpot. It's great being here. It's lovely being in the studio, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we've hit the jackpot.
Well, there's hopefully going to be a lot more of these. And then if you're listening, if this is your first time listening, thanks for listening. And we'll come back next week. We've got lots more and a lot more guests coming on the show as well.
We'll check it in.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!